overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life. I am.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Took this book and Eckhart Tolle did a class on it, and I'm so impressed by it that I've taught it here twice, and it's so relevant for today because he talks about a world that's in crisis. And he wrote this many years ago, and he says, if we don't do something now, God knows what the consequences are going to be. What are we going to be leaving to our children? Are we going to be leaving a safe world or a world that's in crisis? And so he talks about the willingness to hear the cries of the planet and to hear the voice of the hungry and those who are disadvantaged. It's not about us being privileged and others not being, because we're all in this together. In the Sufi tradition, which I studied for a long time, they say there's only one sin in Sufism. I'd like to make it simple. And they say the one sin is, if you have more than you need in this lifetime, and your neighbor doesn't have anything, then who are we to say, you know, that we're superior? So if you've got five chairs and they don't even have one chair, could you spare a chair to your neighbor? So what if the opportunity for all of us now is to serve one another, to walk each other home, to hold each other in our gaze? Adam was saying, after listening to me at the very first when this coronavirus came out, I shared in India, you're not allowed, men and women are not allowed to touch, unless you're family members. But my friend David Tharp, when he was in India, he says, but I'm a hugger, what am I supposed to do? And this beautiful woman from India, she bowed to him, and she says, you may embrace me with your eyes. And so he said, I went all over India, touching my heart and embracing people with my eyes. So what if that's our opportunity? When I go to Costco, or when I go to the grocery store, and I see the young girl at the checkout center, and I see the angry man in front of me, 6 feet separate, and he's telling her, what's with all the masks? And the young girl says to him, I heard her so sweetly say, sir, many people are terrified by you not wearing a mask. You're disrespecting those that are afraid. So maybe we're here to speak the truth with as much clarity as we can, even though this world is confused and going through what it's going through. So the first Sunday of May, I took different chapters from this book to highlight them. And the one I started with was, it's time to wake up. It's time to wake up. We can't stay asleep anymore. And the funny thing, when you say it's time to wake up, it's like we're in this dream that everything was perfect and normal and everybody was happy. And then, of course, this virus, which they had premonitions that this would happen. So many countries were prepared. We weren't prepared for this. We had Ebola and swine flu, so many warnings. This could be on the horizon. But when it did finally arrive, could we awaken to being prepared? You know, when I was a Boy Scout, one of our mottos was be prepared. So when something like this happens, you know how to meet it. First you have to safe distance, then you mitigate. We were talking about the possible tests that we could have for this. And it's not something that we can say with magical thinking, oh, it's going to be gone tomorrow. I'm supposed to do my niece's wedding, October 10th, big day, 10-10. She's having 150 people fly in from all over the world. I'm supposed to go up as the loving uncle, marry her in this beautiful place up there in Maine. And just yesterday she said, we're going to call off the wedding. Well, the people at the wedding center said, well, that's too bad. The $5,000 you gave us for a deposit, we're keeping. And I said, no, this can't be right. We're in a pandemic. Surely they can say, let's reschedule it another time. So people sometimes have to do the right thing, to do it when it's safe. And I said to my niece, Erin, I said, you know, Erin, I can marry you anytime. She's with her beloved Maddie. They're in Lake Tahoe. They're isolating. She lives in San Francisco. He does. Strangely, he delivers marijuana, medical marijuana to people. I think, what a cool job he must have. And he says, I never feel safe when I'm delivering it because I think they're going to be robbed. And she works for Uber, another place that's kind of controversial because of the cabs and the people. So we're all going through this at one level or another. And the first chapter was about, it's time to wake up. These are tough times. We're going to go through it together. It may not be easy, but we will survive. Beloved President, ex-President Barack Obama gave a beautiful talk to the graduating class of 2020. And he sounded so reassuring by telling our young people that we have been through this before, and we as a country will get through it again. He said our country survived slavery. Our country survived a civil war. Our country survived a Great Depression, two world wars. We survived the AIDS crisis. I lived through that. It was one of the scariest things I ever lived through. We survived 9/11. And through all these various things, we came back stronger. We came back clearer. We came back with more resolve. And he said to the young people, you are the ones that we need. You have the consciousness that we need. Us old fogies have kind of screwed it up. You might have noticed. We've stayed with fossil fuels, and we need to go to clean fuels. So there's so much that we can do and we will do once we awaken. And I quoted William Stafford, the wonderful poet, who said, it is imperative for those who are awake to stay awake, because these are very dark and troubled times. So if you feel just a semblance of being awake, and what would be a being awake would be? A being awake would be, for me, I am responsible for what I bring to the party. Being not awake would be, I'm blaming the whole world out there for the problem. Someone who's awake says, I take responsibility for who I'm being and what I'm bringing to life. And all of life is about relationships. So am I bringing healthy relationships, the relationship to my body, the relationship to the environment, the relationship to your partner and your friends and your family? It's all about relationship, your relationship to your health. Beloved Gloria G is here today. She's so radiant today, having survived a stroke. And I know she's going to come back stronger and more resilient, just like I did after the heart attack. So it kind of feels like our planet's had a stroke and a heart attack. And maybe could it come back? Could we be optimistic. I'm married to a man, but whose very nature is pessimist. He sees the worst things happening in everything. And he says, well, maybe we balance each other out, because I have to know that this is a wake-up call. And sometimes we need the two life force. And so the second Sunday of the month, hey, come on in. I spoke about chaos and a higher order of being. It's important to be awake, but then it's important to also know that chaos and order go together. You know, tomorrow, Labor Day, I was supposed to clean the garage out. That's a family ritual. Labor Day, we clean the garage out. Except that I have to do a Rumi class in the morning with Lisa Ferraro and a Rumi class at night. So I'm going to do 4 hours of Rumi tomorrow. So we postponed the cleaning till the day after the morning. But what's so amazing about cleaning out the garage is it is one huge mess. Everything comes out. All the flower pots, all the tools, all the recycled stuff. You know, you've got garages and basements. It's like cleaning out a closet, and it all sits there, and in that abject chaos, order starts to happen. We'll throw certain things out. We'll organize certain things. We blow out the garage. It gets nice and clean. The windows get cleaned. The bikes get moved. An old bike gets fixed and given to a friend. And then you move back, and it's like you feel your whole life, it's in order again. Yesterday I was telling Adam, we have this young man who comes out and for a sideline he cleans windows. He does the best job. For 6 hours he was on the ladder, he was taking off screens. It's like you look out of a glass palace now. There's not a bit of dust or something on every window. And he does it in such a sacred way. So what if in this chaos to a higher order, out of that chaos we could see there's a sacred bringing together. And I feel that's what we're doing here at the center. This is a higher order. People are sitting spaced all over with their masks on, so respectful of one another. And maybe that's going to be the new normal. I heard one of the news people say the new normal is the new abnormal. So we're not going to be shaking hands or hugging each other, even though that someday I hope that all happens again. We're going to be bound to one another and embracing with each other with our eyes and finding a new way to let each other know that I'm here for you and I'm here with you. It's just a crisis of communication. So being awake says I can respond to this in a proactive way. Being not awake says I'm going to react and say this is an awful thing. Last week I spoke about who was the experiencer. You know, so much of what spirituality is about for me is about a case of mistaken identity. We think we are the egoic self. We think we're me, that we're under David Lemmy, we're a Raul Mejia. And that keeps us separate. So the reality is that there's really only one here. So who am I being? Am I being, and I love to use that Emerson statement, he said, it is only the finite self, that's the egoic mind, the personality, the ain't it awful me, it's only the finite self that wails and suffers. He says, but the infinite presence lies stretched in smiling repose at the center of all creation. So who am I being? Am I this infinite presence, that smiling center of life? That's what I see every time I see Jack. I see this beautiful little boy who just radiates love. Or am I this reactionary person who says this world's going to hell in a handbasket and everybody's crazy? No, 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 no. I choose to err on the side of this. Because when I can find this, then I can transmit this to the neighbor that is afraid. And you know, I learned through watching Cesar Millan, who was the dog whisperer, when you have a dog, or we might say a human, a life form, that seems very fragmented and angry, he had such a beautiful way of perceiving it. He said, this animal isn't violent or angry. This animal is insecure. And when you can let that insecure animal, which appears to be violent and angry, know that it is safe, all of a sudden the insecure one becomes a beautiful expression of what it is by true nature. It can flower and open up. So we get to take that higher order of our beingness to this lower, fragmented, reactionary world and contagion them with our smile, with our love, with this presence that lies stretched and smiling and posed. You know, when I would sit with that little visual, the finite self wailing and suffering, Emerson would use the word pule. You know, they pule a lot. They complain a lot. We have them in the White House. He's that finite self that wails and suffers and blames. It's just who he is. But then there's this part that lies stretched in smiling repose. Have you ever experienced that? Where you can say, all is well. It's okay. You don't have to worry about it. Gigi's kind of my rock when that happens. When I get really upset sometimes, I can go to her or Jean sometimes, or Anne-Marie, and they can take me into their peaceful place. Because, you know, we had a dog for a week. His name is Jack. We named him after Jack. And Jack was too much of a handle for us to handle. And I realized that finally Trey, when the dog displayed unstable energy, then Trey responded with his unstable energy. So it was two vicious dogs going at each other. And the more unstable the dog got, the more unstable he got. And I said to him, I said, honey, just turn your back on Jack. And as soon as he turned his back on Jack, Jack became calm again. But I realized I don't have in it to train two dogs. And my old dog, he's 72, and I was afraid he was going to fall down the stairs because Jack would run up and down between his legs. And they just had this kind of relationship. Gloria G was telling me about sometimes you just have to err on the side of maybe this isn't right for me. And that's the greater part of wisdom, to know when it's not right and you get to move. And so there was a sense of relief. Jack is back in his foster home with his high energy thing. And we're back in our house with our two old dogs and their mellow ways. And all is well, and I can go back into this natural flow. So yeah, who am I being? Was that yesterday, last week's talk? And this Sunday, Eckhart Tolle's near the very, very end of the book, and he's trying to give us resolutions, what the new earth needs. He says, what we need is awakened doing. Interesting. And he says, and he goes into this inquiry, self-inquiry. He says, when you turn within, you get to discover who am I being? And he says, find an inner purpose. An inner purpose is different from an outer purpose. You know, these young people are going to high school and they'll graduate and people say, what are you going to do with your life? Well, it's not so much what are you going to do, who are you going to be in your life? You know, whatever you do, the doing comes out of the being. So he says, first find that inner purpose. Maybe I'm going to be accepting and loving. Maybe I'm going to be creative and spontaneous. Maybe I'm going to be free and explore an adventure of my soul. And so that inner being, then the doing comes later. The doing comes out of the being. And let me just give you what he says in here, because it's so, and he gives a really beautiful way of understanding how we can apply that at this time. It's so relevant for today. He says, awakened doing is the alignment of this outer purpose, in other words, what you do in the world, with your inner purpose. It's awakening and staying awake. And then through awakened doing, you become one with the outgoing purpose of the universe. You become an ambassador of the universe, not the finite self that's out to get rich and famous and all that stuff, but the universe is using you as a conduit so that you are an expression of divine love, an expression of infinite creativity. And it speaks in symbols. That's what Jack said when he was 9. The universe wants to use us. When Jack came into my world, I said, this man is gifted because he is a conduit for something that most people can't understand. They don't understand the genes when they surface on the planet. Consciousness flows through you into the world, and it flows into your thoughts and inspires them. Consciousness is what we are. What awakens is consciousness, and it's the infinite mind of the universe, and it wants to use our local mind. Einstein tapped into it. All the great mystics have tapped into it. I myself do nothing. It's this force that we all access that is doing all the doing. That's awakened doing. It's not me. Jesus knew it. Consciousness flows through you into the world, and it flows into your thoughts and inspires them. It flows into what you do, and it guides you and empowers you. There's a sense of urgency and enthusiasm there. And this universe is a creative universe. That's what it does. Look around you. It creates. And it wants you and I to create. So what if I didn't identify as the creator or the doer? I would say, I'm going to let the universe create through me. It can sing through me, dance through me, bake through me, do art through me, explore how we can, through just a simple inquiry, use the divine imagination to how can we make this world a better place and serve humanity, all of life. He says, not what you do, but how you do what you do determines whether you are fulfilling your destiny. There was a song in the 40s that said, it's not what you do, but the way that you do it. Not what you say, but the way that you say it. Not what you do, but the way that you do it. That's what gets results. You know? So what if it's not how David does this, or what David says, but is David opening to this voice, this Orphic voice, this clear sense of awareness that it's bigger than all of us? And could I let my instrument be a conduit for that awareness to flow through? He says, and how you do what you do is determined by your state of consciousness. So what is your state of consciousness? We're always going back to consciousness. Everything is an object of consciousness. When I was a brand new student of the science of mind, they dealt at a level of a mental science. Maybe this is getting your training wheels or being in a tricycle, that your thought is creative. You know, you create your own reality by what you choose to put your attention on. Adam and I were talking about, if there is the boat of anger and reaction, am I going to get in that boat? If I get in that boat, then I'm linked up with a tribe of angry and reactive people. Or am I going to say, no, I don't choose to get in that boat? So first there is a mental science, but then there is an emotional science and a spiritual science, and it's all, we're co-creators with the universe. Boy, isn't that amazing? We're co-creators with the universe. The word is in your mouth, a blessing or a curse, according to how you use it. That said Moses. He understood this law of creation. So am I creating a proactive, positive, loving world? Or am I creating a fearful world based on all kinds of conspiracy theories? There's so much of that out there. You can get in the boat of conspiracy theories and ride around and shake your head and put your hand up against your forehead. Or you can say, no, I'm going to be in the boat of divine possibilities and to see how this is waking us all up and learn how to come together. That's what Jane Stearns was all about. She was amazing. She's still with us. Okay. He says, a reversal of your priorities comes about when the main purpose for doing what you do becomes the doing itself, or rather, the current of consciousness that flows into what you do. So this current of consciousness is what determines the quality of your life. Another way of putting it is, in any situation and in whatever you do, your state of consciousness is the primary factor. The situation and what you do is secondary. So Nikki works in the hospitals, and she is very efficient at what she does. But it's who she is that really is where the impact comes. She is those beautiful, loving eyes that looks down at somebody. And I remember when I was under the knife, and that beautiful anesthesiologist looked at me and smiled and said, you're going to be okay. And just that affirmation helped me move into that place. So yes, she did the technical stuff, but she also did the heart stuff. So he's saying it's most important who you are, not what you do. He says future success is dependent upon and inseparable from the consciousness out of which the actions emanate. So what is the consciousness that's operating in me? Just sit with that question. Is it that calm, peaceful, loving presence? Is it that divine imagination that sees the possibilities? Dr. Ernest Holmes in The Science of Mind refers to the universe or God as the totality of possibilities. Now, isn't that so abstract and beautiful that it makes you ponder the imponderable? So if the universe is the totality of possibilities, and we need a new consciousness, a younger consciousness, a creative consciousness, to give birth to it, because we old fuddy-duddy just lose hope for us, but ultimately, we need a new species on this planet. Barbara Marx Hubbard called it Homo Universalis, the universal human that realizes that we're all part of one life. That's the mystic awareness, sees things in wholes. He says that can be either a reactive force of your ego or the alert, attentive, and awakened consciousness of your soul. We can either be in this reactive place of ego, trying to control things, fix things, manipulate the outer, or we can be in a surrendered, humbled place of receptivity, discovery, service, and emergence. Barbara Marx Hubbard's last book is called Emergence. There is this Homo Universalis that wants to emerge through all of us, this higher order of being, and it needs all of us to do it. If the world's going to wake up, it has to start with you and me. Starts with you and your life, starts with me and my life. And then we contagion one another. You notice in this ohana, in this community, and even Adam said, the moment I walked into this room, I felt there was a different vibration here. I wasn't being told to believe certain erroneous thinking. You know, Trey was reading to me on the front porch the other day, and I find it humorous. That's why I think it's worthy of reading, that Pat Robertson, the head of the 700 Club, said that the coronavirus is here because of gay marriage. And I thought, what? I said, you mean because Trey and I got married 2 years ago after only being together for 43 years that we brought on the coronavirus? Am I supposed to believe something as silly as that? You know, this is kind. So you begin to say, I'm not fully there. Anyway, rest that case on that. He said, you can be either in a reactive force of the ego or the alert attention of the awakened awareness. All truly successful action comes out of field of alert attention rather than from the ego and conditioned unconscious thinking. It all comes from that higher order of being. So then Eckhart Tolle, in his sweet little way of trying to give us solutions, he found that there are three modalities, or you might call them frequencies of consciousness, that arise when you're doing awakened doing. This is it. And he says the three things that are necessary. First is acceptance. The second is enjoyment. And the third is enthusiasm. So we're having the COVID experience, the coronavirus here. He says, if you are in acceptance of it, then you show up here on Sunday. You're not denying that it exists and taking hydroxychloroquine and sticking a sanitizer in your veins and saying that this is a hoax and not real. No, you accept that this is here. We have a thing called COVID-19, the coronavirus. And in accepting it, I'm going to be mindful and I'm going to wear a mask. And I'm going to practice safe distancing. And I'm going to enter one door, go out the next, and I'm going to use sanitizer. Adam, when he came here this morning, says we must assume that everyone is perhaps a carrier, and then we can be safe. So when we wear a mask, it's not to protect ourselves, it's to protect others in case you are an asymptomatic carrier. None of us knows, you know. Trey, in January, we went down to Bay St. Louis, and every day Trey went to the casinos gambling. And I have to say, he's got a desk drawer upstairs with hundreds and hundreds of dollars in, because for some reason he knows how to play the slot machines. He considers it's an addiction. He's got a gambling addiction and he doesn't realize it. But I said to him, I'm not so much concerned about the money. Is did you catch the virus when you were in the casinos? And he says, you know, maybe I'm one of those asymptomatic carriers. Nobody knows. So if we act like we could have it, you know, I was meeting this young man who said he had the symptoms. He had a cough in December. My brother-in-law, my niece's husband, what does that make you? My nephew-in-law? He was sick all through January. And he's convinced, he told my niece Molly, he says, I know I had it. He was living in Manhattan at the time when everybody was in denial. And he worked on Wall Street. And he was down there with the stock exchange and all those people next to each other. He said, I know that's what I have. So what if we have to be even more mindful? And that's what he's saying here. So the three things, the modalities that you get are acceptance. So the first thing in acceptance, I had to digest Eckhart Tolle, he did a whole chapter of each one. Acceptance When acceptance is there, there's a sense of peace. There's not a sense of denial. You know, I don't know if I'm crazy, but I feel very peaceful during this time. I'm not afraid. I'm finding that I walk the neighborhood, I walk the streets, and I smile at my neighbors. I keep the safe distancing going. When someone comes to the garden like Raul and Gigi, I practice safe distancing and I take joy in showing them the flowers. You know, what if we could do it mindfully? So acceptance, when you're in acceptance, he says, no matter what's happening in life, he says, the acceptance brings a sense of peace. Acceptance brings a sense of peace. I was studying with a sadhu, he's quite famous, Sadhu Jaggi Vasudev, and he talked about how we use this word love way too flippantly, as he said to you. And he said, true love is merely a deep acceptance of what is. Could you accept another as they are, not as you want them to be? And when there is this deep, deep acceptance of what is, there is a sense of peace and a real sense of love. You know, if you have triplets, you have to accept the triplets as all being three unique beings. Now, if you wanted the triplets all to conform and be one specific person, you would be a mess. But if you say they're going to be unique expressions, then I'm one of four children. None of us are alike. It's like we came from a different litter, all four of us. And isn't that wonderful to accept this diversity within unity? So that acceptance is the first one. He said, if you can't accept, then acceptance leads to enjoyment. So Adam was here strapping it up, putting the signs up, and we're going to clean up one of the lights, change the bulbs. And as he's standing on the ladder and I'm handing the bulbs, he's wearing his mask, and we're doing this, and we find out that the ballast is broken. Adam has the gall to say, this is so much fun. I said, you're having fun at changing light bulbs? He says, yeah. I'm standing on the ladder, I'm having a conversation with you, we're putting the house in order, and it's fun. He was enjoying it. So what if you could actually enjoy the stuff that isn't supposed to be enjoyable? I love to garden. It's great, great therapy for me. Wanda Gail Campbell sent me a notice yesterday that Richard Rohr, his little spiritual thing that he sends out daily, said, for those who can go out in nature and find it a healing resource, it could be one of the greatest healers on the planet. And she said, I thought you would appreciate this. And so I texted her back and I said, you're just affirming what I already know. Anytime I go out and I go to the pond and I throw food out for the koi, they all come up and go, oh, oh, and we have our little relationship. And then I go out in the garden and I notice a plant that maybe needs water and I water it. Say, oh, thank you. And I have strange people walking by the car and saying, thank you, rolling down the windows. Thank you. It gives me so much joy to see all that wild, crazy beauty. I was walking in my back patio the other day, and some dear soul had stopped by and dropped off a little bowl of, what are they called? Johnny Jump-Ups? Cornflowers. I don't call them cornflowers. There's another name for them. Anyway, there's a little cornflower display right there, and it makes me smile every time I look at that. So what if a flower, now there's also a sign in the garden, a saying by Ralph Waldo Emerson that says, earth laughs in flowers. So I'm kind of one of those crazy people that when I look at a flower, I feel this joy of nature. So that's enjoyment. Could we enjoy ourselves even during these times? You know, when Humphrey had the herniated disc in his neck, as traumatic as that was, it made his life so sacred for me. And he came back after being paralyzed, and he came back a different pup. And he doesn't move well. He moves like a drunken sailor. He's so cute because he stumbles from side to side. But he loves his newfound ability to walk, and he can't do it that well. So when we take walks around the neighborhood, he now rides in a stroller. And he looks like royalty. He sits in his stroller. And so many people stop. I've had people stop on Pratt Avenue and look at Humphrey sitting in a stroller because he's so cute. And Bert walks right by his side, you know. And so could we have enjoyment even with something as simple and mundane as going for a walk in the neighborhood or cooking a meal? Last night we had snow peas from the garden. They're overflowing snow peas, Gigi. Go get some. And we had a huge plate of snow peas from the garden. And there's something about mindfully going and picking the vegetable and sautéing it up and realizing it was a gift from nature and that you participated in that. So another thing, he says, is enjoyment. And the third modality, the third frequency, is the highest one of them, is to have enthusiasm. Because enthusiasm brings hope. You know, when Jude walked in here today, she's so radiant with her enthusiasm for life. And we talked about how we're talking about things that are taboos in our society. We're talking about health. We're talking about suicide. We're talking about isolation. We're talking about depression. All things are now open for discussion. Let's no longer hide it in the closet, but let's bring it up. Could we have enthusiasm that maybe this is what the country needed and for us to discuss science? Is that such a bad word, science? That we need to have clean air and clean water in order for us to survive? That we need to tend to this planet? That we need to do safe gardening with chemicals? I don't put any chemicals in my garden. You know, in the olden day, because I'm such a gardener, they used to take a rototiller and till the fields. Well, now they know that's the worst thing for the soil. They've got no-till gardening now because the microorganisms build up in soil that has been left alone. You mulch it, you amend it, but you don't dig it up and destroy all the colonies where the worms are and all the bacteria and the mulch. So could we be teachable? And so I'm enthusiastic. Maybe we're going to get better with this thing called being human. Maybe we're going to be more compassionate to one another. I hear that the highest rates of this occur in places where people are condensely packed, like nursing homes, like prisons, dare I say, like cages on the border. Could we, even some people are getting out of jail and going home to spend their luxury jail sentence at home, could we do the same for the least of these, for the infirm, you know, for the children of the planet? I don't know, but there's something in me that says every child is my child. When we went to South Africa for the Parliament of the World Religions in 1999, I thought I was going for the spiritual conference, and when I went there was to see the suffering of that country. There were so many homeless children, they broke my heart. And the very first person I heard speak was a black woman standing up there, and she lost all five of her children to AIDS. And she was speaking, she said, "We are all the mother," and it was a packed room, "and they are all our children." And I realized that was the cry of the world saying, could I be that nurturing presence to all the children? And so when they would come up to me in the streets of Cape Town, the white people would say, "Oh, they're just wanting drugs. Oh, they're just wanting glue to sniff." I saw kids that were hungry that needed food. And I would take them and I'd feed them. I'd say, "What do you want to eat?" "You'd want to eat an ice cream cone." I'd get them an ice cream cone. And they'd look at me like, "Who are you to feed these kids an ice cream cone?" I said, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to do my little bit to help." And the last day I was there, I went to an orphanage, and you could see that they all, because I was white, they were all standoffish, and they would all stand away from me. Could we do what we can do? She see it as a cry for us to awaken. So I'm enthusiastic that something good will come out of this. Finally, Eckhart Tolle takes those three modalities, and he calls them frequency holders. And he says, we have to become containers of those three things: acceptance, enjoyment, and enthusiasm. These are states of being, not states of doing. And when we can be an accepting person, when we can be a happy person, because a happy person will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness, could we be literally finding joy like Adam did, intending the church? He says, how can I help with the wisteria? There's joy in service. Gigi knows that. I saw when Matt was here cleaning up that beautiful plant that I call Jane. I call Lady Jane over here. At her memorial service, and it's blooming its head off, to just tend it, to water it. There's a joy in service, and then the enthusiasm, and theos means to bring God into it. And he said, these are the three frequencies that will be the hallmark of awakened doing. Remember, you're not the doer, you are the doing your being. So it's kind of a simple thing, it's Eckhart Tolle, and then he says, be a holder of that frequency. So let me read you what he says about the frequency holder. The frequency hold. That's right here. David's got too many books. That's a good thing. Here's what a frequency hold is. And you are that. He says, on the arising of our new earth, which is what we need so desperately, however this will happen, our role is just as vital as that of all creators and donors and reformers. Their function is to anchor the frequency of this new consciousness on our planet. And I call them the frequency holders. We're bringing a new consciousness here to the world. And he says, we are here to generate consciousness through the activities of our daily life, through our interactions with others, as well as through just being who you are. Just be who you are. Be a loving presence in the world. That's done. That's enough, he said. And let that loving presence carry itself into the grocery store and into the classroom, to be a friend to everyone. He goes on to say, in this way, they endow the seemingly insignificant with profound meaning. Llewellyn Bunley, my teacher, and I'm going to close with him on his new book called The Awakened World. He wrote it, the one that's hot off the press, is called Spiritual Ecology, 10 Ways to Bring the Sacred to the World. And he talks about simple things, just like Eckhart Tolle, let your walking be sacred. Thich Nhat Hanh, one of the Buddhist teachers I studied with, he says the miracle is not to walk on water like Jesus did, or to walk on fire like so many are doing now, fire walking. He says, but to walk on this earth where every step is a blessing to this planet. So could our walking on this earth, like walking in the stroller with Humphrey, just being a way to say, what a beautiful garden I live in, and it's all my garden. And to smile at my neighbor and say, I wish you the best, bless you, may you be happy and healthy, and may you be peaceful and at ease. To give that beautiful, loving kindness blessing to everyone you see, not just your friends, but to your neighbors. There's so much warmth that's taking place in my neighborhood because of this coronavirus. I like to think we're actually being loving to one another. Does it take that? So the Llewellyn says you can do it in your cooking, in your cleaning, in the simplest things, in your studying for school. I remember when I was a kid, your age, Jack and Catherine, I loved school because I could discover things that I didn't know about. And I loved, my mind was so teachable and fertile. And I began to explore other spiritual paths, and it took me on this quest, this pathless path, this questless quest to find myself within. That there's beauty and enthusiasm. Could even your studying be a sacred thing? Everything, he's saying, bring the sacred back into the ordinary. He says, their task is to bring spacious stillness into our world by being absolutely present in whatever we do. To be fully present in whatever we do. To be fully present. He says, there is consciousness and therefore a quality in what they do, even the simplest task. And their purpose, these holders of the frequency holders, which is y'all, he says, their purpose is to do everything in a sacred manner. That's exactly what Llewellyn said. As each human being is an integral part of a collective human consciousness, they affect the world much more deeply than is visible on the surface of our lives. So think about it, you know, who are some of the ones that bring that consciousness to the planet that we so desperately need? We were doing a little revealing service before we came here this Sunday, and Glory G was reminding me of my dog, Lady Speck. She was a frequency healer in my world. She would bring in that gentle, loving, unconditional presence wherever she went. She's no longer with us in form, but I feel it all the time. So that must confirm there's no death. And then I was thinking of my old dog, Bert. He brings in such a depth. When he would come to the classes, when we were in the classroom, all of a sudden Bert would be sitting at my feet, and he'd be giving a little whimper, and they'd say, what's wrong with Bert? And then somebody from across the room would say, he wants your chair. So I'd stand up and I'd sit on one of the side chairs, and then Bert would get up and he'd do a circle in the chair, and he'd go, hum, and then he'd look over the room. And he was giving his darshan to the whole room. He was a frequency of acceptance, of joy and enthusiasm in his own Bert sort of way. So what if when you find it in here, you see it in the world, and you cannot see it in the world until you find it in here. Ernest Holmes says, it's only love that will see love. So when you're seeing love in the world, when you're seeing hope in the world, Gene and I have this thing for hope, it's because hope is arising in you. It's a beautiful thing. Hope springs eternal. I hope that humanity is going to catch the hint here. It's time for us to wake up. It's more than just about getting bread on the table and having fame and fortune. It's about loving one another. It's about serving the one in the many, and the many in one, because what we are is the divine coming into expression. So that's Eckhart Tolle's little thing on the awakened one, and it's really quite profound. But then to go a little bit deeper, I jumped into awakening the world. And this goes a step further. Llewellyn says, because there's only one here and because we are the world. Remember that song of Michael Jackson? We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones who make a better place, so let's start getting it. You know, and there was a crisis at the time. I think it was Bangladesh. And something happened, and hearts were opened, and pocket purses were emptied, and people were helping on this planet. And the truth is that we are the world, and we're hearing the cries of the world. And so he says, if we want the world to awaken to its spiritual magnificence, we have to do it first, because we are the world. It has to start in small centers like right here at the Center for Spiritual Living, because it ain't going to happen down the street. You know, they're still caught up in judgment and duality and good and bad, and right and wrong. And here we recognize that there is no good or bad, but thinking makes it so. So how are my thoughts? Are my thoughts empowering, loving, creative thoughts? Because thought is creative. Are my thoughts filled with imagination and potential, who sees things in symbols and not in logical things? Because we have to think out of the box if we're going to transform this world. We have to think in terms of possibility. That's why Jack is so necessary. You didn't realize that, did you, Jack? That you're necessary here on the planet. We all are. But especially those who are younger and creative. So this is Llewellyn. He says we have to find the yes to life. The yes, which is even bigger than acceptance of this coronavirus. It says yes. The planet gave us this. It's not a mistake. It's not a problem to be fixed. It's an opportunity for humanity to awaken at a higher order of being. It's necessary. It's an existential imperative right now. And here's Llewellyn. He says, every day, every moment, we have to say yes to our beloved and his life. He says there is only one life. That life is God's life. That life is perfect, and that life is our life now. So could we say yes to God's life as us? There's no me separate from that. That's the oneness thing Adam and I were talking about. It's God's life. You know how humble you have to be to say, I am God in expression? So he's saying that same thing. And in this primal yes, we celebrate his presence in our life and in the world. What is man that thou art mindful of him? Thou hast made him a little lower than the angels and hath crowned him with honor and glory. Right there in the Psalms. We are here to glorify and honor that very thing through our example, through our expression. Remember, the soul wants to express, the ego wants to impress. If you're out there to impress the world, you're trapped in your ego. If you're there to express, you're a conduit for the soul. So he says, we are not here to change the world, but to experience it through his eyes of revelation. This divine presence says, not that God gave us the coronavirus. Divine presence says, you human beings created this for your evolution. Just like everything else you've created, this is here for you to wake up. How many wake-up calls do we need as a species? And God knows we've had a lot. I was sharing, you know, in Montgomery, Alabama, one of our great wonders of the world is the lynching museum. I met a young man up there walking the dogs in Maine, and he was one of the creators of the lynching museum with some people in Birmingham. He came up with the concept. And they're going to do something else in Birmingham, he said, because there's such a rich prejudice down here in the South. And then, it was just last week when they gave out the Pulitzer Prizes, they gave one posthumously to a woman who is now 75 years dead, because she was the one person that had the courage to speak about the lynchings when nobody would speak about them in the South. She got a posthumous Pulitzer Prize for her writing. So what if we could learn from that? That we don't need to go out and lynch one another. That's our history. So he's saying the same thing. We are not here to change the world, but to experience it through his eyes of revelation, never again. And then we will see that it has already changed. And what most people imagine as life is just the fading images of a previous era. You know, Eckhart Tolle in The New Earth says, as the old era is dissolving, the new one is simultaneously happening. So yes, it's painful for some. The new normal is uncomfortable, but it's dissolving so that this new order of being could come along. When I grew up and I was a young man like Jack's age, I never wanted to go in churches because I was hearing from the pulpit that I'm an abomination in God's eyes. So I said, religion's the opiate people, and I never would go in any place. And then it took me into my 20s and early 30s to discover spirituality didn't need the container of religion. And then I began to have an intimate, deep relationship with this divine presence that didn't condemn, but that uplifted. So what if I had to go through that period in order to discover this period? And it gets even deeper and stronger the more you open to it, because there's no end to how this divine presence gives itself. You know, as Ram Dass said, my guru stroked me. And dare I say to Glory to you, your guru stroked you. And it was a gift from the universe. It doesn't mean that we've been punished by God. We got our little wake-up call from life. It's beautiful. And he says, and looking through the patterns of conditioning, we see a dying world destroying itself with greed and pollution. But through the eyes of revelation, which is what we're seeking to have here, through the eyes of revelation, we'll see a new world that's forming amidst this shadow world. A whole new world. It needs you and me right now. Not to fix the old one, because the old one's dying. This new one needs to give birth. It desperately needs it. So he says, through our yes. You know, isn't it funny? My bookmarker said yes. Through our yes, we claim our right to see what the light of the new, to see with the light of the new, to experience what is being born. And then in a moment, both so simple and so extraordinary, we realize that we are what is being born. This presence is giving birth to itself through each one of us. You know how humble you have to be to say that? Fall on your knees. It's not me. I myself do nothing. Jesus was there. He says this presence does everything. He said, what I do, you too shall do in greater. Because we're all the same. He recognized that the Christ is that which is within all creation, but it needs to awaken. So he said, in the miracle of his oneness, the oneness of the God, the center of life is within us, and the mystery of life happens in every moment for each one of us. We are the center of the circle. We are the beloved revealing herself anew in every moment. That's how the book ends. We are the beloved revealing herself, himself, itself, in every moment through this holy instant. And then wait upon the Lord, as they say. Thank you. Jude was reminding me that I want to thank all of you. I've got some checks in the mail that came here. People sending in their donations to the center. I've gotten some people doing it on PayPal. Thank all of you out there. I put a basket in the back of the room, and I put my little tithe in there. If somebody wants to put in here today, if you do have a little check in hand, the basket's back there. And I want to thank you for keeping me on the task of running the business of the center. Glory G's on the board. She's not in there. We haven't done it. Put the, what do they call it, housework? Housekeeping things. Yeah, to take care of the garden. It takes all of us, it takes a village to do this thing. So I want to thank all of you, Altru and Virtue. If you want to come next Sunday, we'd love to have you. There's a lovely group of people here. As Gloria G said, it's so great to see each one. I feel such a connection to all of you, and I'm so grateful that you're in my life. Know that I need you as much as I think you need the center. And it's nice to know that there's that shared sense of belonging. And what I'm getting out of this whole exploration into this is that we belong to the universe. And that the universe is calling us. It's saying, hello, humans down there. It's time. It's time. You've got the science. You've got the spirituality now. It's time for you to be a part of the solution. It's time to serve the one. I'm going to do my new class on June 10th, which is interesting. It's my dad's birthday. And it's also Judy Garland's birthday. June 10th is when it starts. And it's called Catching the Thread. And I find it interesting how classes come to me. Because I have this wonderful little book that was providing solace to my soul. It's out of print. It's called For the Love of God. And it's 26 essays from some of the greatest spiritual teachers on the planet. It starts with His Holiness the Dalai Lama and with Mother Teresa. And it has just a whole slew of deeply spiritual people offering their gift of awareness, just like Eckhart Tolle and Llewellyn did. And as I read their insights, can I catch the thread of the truth that they're offering to each one of us? Because when I can catch it, then I can see, does it apply to me? Like Brother David Stendhal Rast, he's a Benedictine monk. In his practices, he goes to bed every night giving thanks for five things in his day. I have been doing that for 20 years now, to just give thanks, because it takes me into a whole different dimension. A grateful heart is a joyful heart. You know, I'm grateful to be in this room. It's a privilege to be alive, to be able to think and to have a spiritual community in Alabama that is loving as this. I mean, how blessed am I to find a career where my being can be my doing, where I can actually be a conduit and not just speak about it, but actually live from it. And so there's so much gratitude. So catching the thread of the truth, and it's the truth with a big T, and it's always been there, and all the great teachers have spoken about it, but you have to do it. The Buddha, he said one thing that changed my life and is still working on me. He says, we don't learn from experience. Well, that's a little bit of a slap, because I used to say, we only learn from experience. He says, we learn from our capacity to experience. So then it takes you into, what is my capacity to download the universe? What is my capacity to express the divine through dance, through music, through whatever, because I'm not the doer. It's the doer, and it needs to cook through Gene. It needs to, oh, I don't even know what Glory G does. It needs to rattle Glory G. And because when she gets that rattle in her hand, you never know what's going to come through. It needs to journey through her. And we'll take journeys to places that the mind couldn't conceive of, because then the mind's not there. And then there's that aboriginal soul that gets to discover something about itself that is so organic and so alive. And that's this relationship we're having with life. So this is the new world that must begin within us. And this is the time, and we are the people. And you're the ones that we've been waiting for. So if you're out there in virtual land, know that you're right here in this. And if you're sitting here with a Fakakta mask on your face, know that it's not the mask that you wear, but the light that's behind the mask that's really important. And that there's nothing to be afraid of. And you can heal your life. And you can heal your life. Louise Hay, she gives you the 10 steps to heal your life. And I taught her for years because she was such a huge influence in my life. She came in at the peak of the AIDS crisis. And she would have meetings like this in her living room. They called them Hay Rocks. And it was all these young men dying from AIDS. And they were just dropping like flies. And her first thing is, stop scaring yourself to death. That's the first thing in healing your life. It's not about being afraid. Fear is there. Yes, fear is there. But it's not about letting it steal your life away. You know, and you can feel safe. You put a mask on your face. You can feel safe, sort of. You know, Nikki's on the front lines working in the hospital, and she says, I feel safe every day because everyone's tested. Oh. So what if there's a hint there? Catch the hint. Maybe if we could be tested, and we would know if we're carriers, then we would isolate. Maybe. So could we be open to the possibilities? And our young people are going to lead the way, and they're going to show us old fogies what we need to know, because we're ready to learn, aren't we? Yes, all of us. So let's just do a closing treatment for receptivity. I am open and receptive to this inner guidance system. It is always speaking. It often speaks in the silence. As Jack reminded me, it speaks through symbols. Like it'll maybe show me a flower or a tree. And what is the tree showing me? To put my roots down and ground myself in this eternal truth, and yet reach up and out into the light. So everything is a mute gospel. The gospel is the good news from the universe. And mute means that it's silent, that only our heart can hear. And so by means of this beautiful coming together in the awakened consciousness, we find that there is a purpose that's deep within the soul of all of us that longs to be revealed. And we are here midwifing that revelation of the soul. And sometimes, like Jude reminded me, a good old cough can give birth to a whole new life. And so what if we are giving birth to a whole new life within ourselves, this homo universalis, this universal human, and it is naturally emerging, just like a baby naturally emerges when it's ready. And this is the time for this new species on our planet Earth. Our very existence depends on it. Well, as Llewellyn said, yes, I say yes to the awakening of the world. The world is awakening right now because we are all awakening, and we are holding that frequency of acceptance, of enjoyment, and enthusiasm. We carry that into our doing as the one life, as the one life revealing itself endlessly anew in its amazing diversity, with gratitude and cheerful expectancy. We know that only the coming is sacred. So we embrace the coming, the emergence of this new life, like the phoenix rising from the ashes. And so all of you out there in virtual land, and those of you who are here, put your hands over your heart with me, and let's bring us back to a little ritual that we do as the heart salutation. And repeat after me, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are an aspect of myself.
You are an aspect of myself.
The beloved in me bows to the beloved. In this place we are.
In this place we are.
And feel that presence stretched and smiling, opposing the center of your being right there at your heart chakra. And then lift your fingers up. And then wiggle your fingers as you let that beloved flow out into the world. All is well. All the time. That was fun. So nice to have you out there. Gosh.
I feel like I should clap. I'm so proud.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Thank you. Make a noise unto the joyful noise unto the world. Yeah, joyful noise unto the world. You two look so cute with your blonde haircuts.
We
had several hair colors. Hair colors? You know, it's so much fun. Gloria G had a stage where she was purple and blue. But you know what my friend Helen Street used to say? Pick a color and stare at it. And you gotta laugh, don't you? You gotta have fun with this.
And that part is going on, and I'm just about to laugh.
Okay, well, you look great as a blonde. So nice to meet you. Is it Philip?
Yes.
Beautiful name. I've never known a Philip before. It's not a very common name. It's a pretty name. I think a king's name.
Lover of horses.
What is it?
Lover of horses in Greek.
Lover of horses? Well, Gigi. Cool. Philip means lover of horses. Gigi is a lover of horses. Did you know that's what Philip meant? Philip means lover of horses.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. She's a lover of horses. That's the reason I think.
She's got many Philips in her family.
Oh, she does have Philips in her
Germany.
Family. Oh, come in Germany. Give my love to Jose. And thank you to take Tina for those beautiful masks.
Oh.
They really are. And Anne-Marie and Jean, I love you bunches.
We're so glad to be here.
Oh, gosh. You know, you're my ohana, you guys. Jean, I can't wait to taste your muffins again. And you know, she brought those little cookies, and I came home and trained, and I made a whole dessert out of them. We took the cookies, and we put ice cream on them, and then we poured the kukaka that Gigi made over the top of them. Oh, it was like to die for good. Yeah. And Glory Jean, you stay safe.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhumtsville.org.